This is a Problem Solver Politics production and does not necessarily represent the views of KHTS Radio or its ownership.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up.
T-minus 1 minute.
Live out the true meaning of its creed.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
T-minus 50 seconds.
I am paying for this microphone, Mr. Speaker. Every dollar released from taxation.
T-minus 40 seconds.
That is spent or invested will help create a new job.
Chivalry is dead, and women killed it.
T-minus 30 seconds.
They want to get at the table and start acting stupid. All you got to do is come back with, he's your president, he's your president.
T-minus 20 seconds.
I thought I was liberal until I moved out here. And then there's just like this psycho extra level. Because they feel like the way they think everything should be is so right because they live near an ocean.
All right. Welcome, folks, to Problem Solver Politics. We are live in the KHTS studio. I am your host, Cardinalis, with
Mark Murphy, attempting to maintain civility on the political conversation.
We're also joined by Killer Cody Como. How you doing, Cody? Cody?
Doing great. Happy to be here, Carlos. All right.
little quick technical snap there. Anyway, today we got a really good show planned. We're going to skip the monologue, skip all the regular pleasantries that accompany me and Mark and Problem Solver Politics. And
nothing happened in California or the White House this week, so what the heck?
We've got a great guest with us today. Calling all the way from Pennsylvania, we have got a very interesting environmentalist who's also an author and apparently friends with Mark Ruffalo, too, enough that she got him to write the foreword and the acknowledgments in her new book. Her book is called The Green Amendment, and she's got quite a few opinions on environmentalism. We're going to talk a little bit about her adventures on the Delaware River, the whole nine yards. So we'd like to welcome to the show really fast, Maya K. Van Rossum, pronounced like possum. Maya, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, so we're just going to jump right in here. I usually have like this, you know, kind of like monologue thing that we do. And we usually kind of argue, me and Mark, a little bit about, you know, some current events and everything. But we want to jump right in to speaking with you because we're both very passionate about environmentalism.
Yeah, this given the fact that I was a product manager for Mobil Corporation and managed and produced half the grocery sacks on the West Coast. But I've been reformed.
Yeah, and I actually worked for years before I jumped into the lucrative art of radio as a pest control operator. So both of us have multiple environmental licenses and credentials to our names. I actually have had three licenses in my lifetime. And we know the reason why we wanted to skip a lot of the normal pleasantries is because we know that oftentimes you actually need to get into the nitty-gritty on environmental issues and talk details because broad blanket statements do not work, and we want to give you as much time as possible. So, Maya, first, can you tell us just who you are and what your book is and what the backstory that motivated you to write the book is? Hit it.
Sure, sure. But I do want to say I feel a little gypped that I'm missing out on the monologue. But
okay. The president complained also.
Okay. So I have been an environmental activist for 25 years. During that time, I've served as the Delaware Riverkeeper and leader of my organization, a four-state organization called the Delaware Riverkeeper Network. More recently, though, as you said, I've authored a book called The Green Amendment and am embarking on starting a national movement that I called Green Amendments for the Generations. And in short, that really is trying to get every state in our nation to pass a constitutional provision that gets added to the Bill of Rights section to the Constitution that recognizes and protects the inalienable right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment, and recognizes and protects those rights in the same way we would recognize and protect the other fundamental freedoms we hold dear, like the right to free speech and the right to freedom of religion, for example.
Okay. Now, I love that. Just so you know, in terms of your desire, you are on completely friendly ground. I was a member of the Sea Shepherd Society before they had a TV show and was that silly guy with his teacher mom who was cleaning up trash in the wash basin and on the beach for extra credit in junior high. So I'm loving it. And by the way, to any of our listeners that are able to follow us on Facebook Live, you'll be able to see, if you go to MayaVanRossum.green, check out her website or check out the promo photo that her publicist sent us. This woman is the real deal. She looks like everything that Nike wants in an athletic wear commercial mixed with like the smoldering gaze into the distance of like a conquering cowboy matinee of like, you know, the 60s. She looks like she has like conquered whatever environment or whatever, you know, wild land she is forging through. So obviously you at least look the role, Maya, you know. And I read your book. Well, not the whole thing, because I actually had to skip through some parts because I devoured the notes. The notes. I was actually devouring all of your notes. And I wanted to talk with you because I'm curious when you say, okay, you want this amendment and you want these protections. I want these protections too, okay? But I always notice that there's always this strange disconnect where environmentalism seems to have been co-opted into political motivations. Does that make sense? What do you feel like the state of environmentalism is nowadays? Because it's become this hot button item that I've noticed is kind of like a club that people carry instead of a cause that people fight for. So when you say you're an environmentalist, now it takes on all this extra baggage. Just how do you meander through your life dealing with that? And what is your definition of environmentalism? And then we're going to go into the details of your book.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think all too often being an environmentalist or the concept environmentalism does get co-opted, and it gets co-opted by industry and by politicians and people who want to use it as some sort of green cover to serve their own personal purpose, right? And so that can give, give other people a bad rap, a bad name, right? Because people don't fully understand when you really talk about standing up for the environment and trying to give nature a voice in our human world, which, by the way, when you protect nature, you protect people, right? It's all wrapped into one. And I think the only thing I can say in terms of how I navigated in my life is I really try to speak the truth. And when people are co-opting the environment, when they are trying to misuse or abuse the environmental message, I call it out. And I don't care which side of the political spectrum they're on. You have to call it out, and then I just try to be genuine. And you know, all your words about me in the opening were so very kind, and they gave me a laugh. But really, I work really hard every single day to make sure that my work and my advocacy is about the environment, is about the earth and our rivers and our forests and our animals and the people that depend upon healthy nature, and that it doesn't become about Maya, right? And so for example with the book, I try to make really clear to people, I'm not out there shilling for books. Every single penny made off of my book goes back to the cause of seeking green amendments to protect the environment for present and future generations. So I think all you can do is be genuine.
Cool. Totally agree. So really quickly, tell us a little bit about the details of what you propose in this Green Amendment. There are parts of me that bristle when you start, you know, saying, I want to pass legislation that's sweeping, that's nationwide, that sounds a little bit like cap and trade and the whole debacle we had here in California. You know, do you have any specifics of what you think would work and any specific problems that would be solved if we did it your way?
Yeah, so I'm not actually talking about passing legislation. I am really talking about passing a constitutional amendment. And I'm not talking about, in the first instance, doing it at the federal level. I'm talking about each state adding to the Bill of Rights section of their constitution this constitutional provision that recognizes the inalienable right to a healthy environment. And so, you know, when you think about how powerful and how important constitutional provisions have been for fighting for fundamental freedoms like civil rights and due process rights and the right to free speech and freedom of the press, when you even look at you know, people who are fighting for gun rights, right, and how much power and strength the constitutional provisions in our state and federal constitutions have given them in their arguments to argue for their right to bear arms. Well, what I want to do is harness that same kind of power for the environment, right? Because people in their hearts believe when they go to get a glass of water out of the faucet, right, that it's going to be free of toxins that might give them cancer, right, that it is actually going to be clean water. And they believe that they have a right to clean water, that they have a right to clean air, that they have a right, you know, to healthy soils in which they can grow healthy foods. But across the United States of America, that's just not true. You do not have a right to clean water, clean air, or a healthy environment, except with very limited exception.
I'm curious, this is Mark. I'm very curious about if these people really want to have that, and reading your section on fracking in Oklahoma and Texas and the other areas is absolutely fascinating, and I can just see the water coming out of their tap on fire. Being someone who had a lot of oil and families and came out of the Texas area, I can see this. And so here I'm going, these are the people who turned around and in great numbers voted for a president who has pushed us back into coal, pulled us out of the Paris Accord, hampered and came down hard on the EPA and has been pulling back various amendments across the board, trying to get legislation, trying to roll back environmentalism. These people who are bleeding from this still voted for this man. Do you think they're really ready to make constitutional amendment at this level?
That's a really important point and a really important question. And I got to tell you, I don't understand either how anybody who cares about the health of their families, cares about the health of their children or grandchildren, could actually put a person in the presidency like Donald Trump when he vowed to, you know, to take the steps that would devastate our earth. So I totally hear you on that when you look big picture. But, you know, after 25 years of advocacy, I have gone into so many communities where people politically are so conservative, so to the right, and just happily surprised at how much they embrace environmental protection when they find themselves facing their own challenge and see how, you know, dirty water and dirty air is harming their health or their families. Suddenly they're open to transformation. They're open to a different path. They're open to different understandings. And so I think when you catch people in that right moment in time, you can get people to change. That being said, I mean, you know, you talked about people in two fossil fuel states, but the beauty of pursuing green amendments is that we are doing it state by state by state. So, you know what? Maybe the people of Oklahoma aren't ready, but perhaps the people of California are. Perhaps the people of Maine and, you know, and Idaho and other states are ready. And I actually believe they are, because we right now, since I've started this Green Amendment movement, we've actually gotten Green Amendment proposals in four states, one of which is West Virginia, which itself, right, has suffered from the fossil fuel industry for years. So I think that communities are ready to realize that our current system of environmental protection laws is failing us, and that they need something better, and that that they need a higher power. And when they fundamentally understand that the Constitution does not protect their right to a healthy environment, they are shocked by it, and they do want to turn it around, because they realize that we all need clean water and clean air, all of us.
Okay.
And so I think people get it.
Okay, I completely agree with you. All of us need clean water, clean air. Maya, did you bring a football helmet? Because this is where we're gonna put it on. Okay, I absolutely, like, the reason I was intrigued by you and I wanted to have you on my show is because I legitimately felt through your writings and through your media that you are interested in clean air, clean water, clean environment for everybody. And as long as both of us have those pure intentions, then, you know, we can reach an agreement 99% of the time. Now, what I've noticed, and the reason why I bristle and I push back on that big time, is because I have found in my experience so many examples where environmentalism has gone too far to such a point that it begins to damage the very environment that it says it wants to defend, or it gets co-opted to become an economic tool against an enemy instead of an environmental tool to better the lives of all of our citizens. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples, okay? I have a big frustration with, for example, carpool lanes in California. There's been multiple studies that have multiple studies done that have shown that carpool lanes are a failed experiment. Well-intentioned, but when we dedicate one lane just to carpoolers and then slow down all the other lanes not for carpoolers, that we start traffic sooner, alleviate it later, and what we gain from the carpool lane does not offset what we worsen in the general public lane. So when you do the math trying to lower carbon emissions, you are actually better off with no carpool lane, letting the public just do their thing, than you are with a carpool lane. So as an environmentalist and a non-science denier, if you're willing to look at the studies, do the math, and use the frontal lobe in your brain instead of doing the tribalistic kind of like, oh, Democrats, they're the environmentalists. Republicans and Trump, they hate the environment. You know, if you're willing to actually do the math and look at it, who's the bigger environmentalist? The Republican that says, hey, it's a failed experiment, we should get out of this, it doesn't benefit us? Or the Democrat, who I have sat down with in this very chair and talked with in between sessions, saying, dude, I would never propose to get rid of that. Could you imagine the optics of a Democrat saying, I want to get rid of the carpool lane? So this is where I push back on statements like, you know, Republicans or Donald Trump are science deniers and they don't like the environment because they want to get out of the Paris Accords. The Paris Accords would have been a huge economic burden on America that none of the rest of the countries that were in the Paris Accords would have had to bear in order to bring down the world's temperature 0.1%. I mean, honestly, we could just have state laws enacted by governors here with smaller localized municipalities doing their part. They could do a better job than the Paris Accords without destroying trillions of dollars of our economy. So, well, this is where I bristle.
That's what we've had. The states have had to step up where the president pulled out the country. States like California stepped up, and in effect are small nations, except we're not a small nation.
Yeah, but the only problem
is... participate.
Yeah, but when they step up, they do silly things. Like, for example, before me and my father sold our company, we were engaged in pest control. And, you know, the state's broke. And so in the name of environmentalism, they say they're going to raise taxes on companies that deal with pesticides. Well, you know, they were now all of a sudden taxing our secretary, who never leaves the office, for falls from a 30-foot ladder, an extra $6,900 a quarter. Like, that has nothing to do with the environment. It has nothing to do with, you know, her safety going in and out of the office. It has everything to do with raising capital because they knew they could no longer raise any more the state income tax. And so that's just one example, you know. So I guess here's my question for you.
I just want to say, I mean, you know, this is part of the, you can't make it about politics. And I hear you. And look, and I mentioned Donald Trump earlier, and that's because he made very, very clear when he was running for office he would be an anti-environmentalist. When Obama was in the presidency, if you came and talked to me, I would have been just as direct about the positions that Obama took in support of the dirty fossil fuel that is fracked gas and fracked oil. He was wrong on that. If you ask me about Al Gore, I will tell you how disappointed I was in Al Gore at the time and to this day, that when he was actually in office, he had an opportunity to make real change when it came to climate changing emissions and for environmental protection, and he didn't. So I'm going to speak just as firmly about any politician on any side of the political spectrum if they're wrong on the environment. And if you and in fact, when you read the book, I will give credit where credit is due to the Republicans and the pro-environmental stance that they took at critical times in history. So, you know, I really like to try to take the politics out of it. And you got to call people out where they are. But you also can't, you can't pretend that this is about the environment versus the economy. When you do it the right way, you get environmental protection and economic benefit at the same time. And that's been proven time and time and time again. And you protect people's health, right? Which really matters, right? You don't want somebody to suffer. You don't want them to lose their health or lose their life or lose their child because of environmental degradation that somebody says has to go forward in order to create a job for some other family member to feed their child, right? You have to acknowledge what are the ramifications of pollution and what are the benefits of protection.
Oh, this is awesome. See, I liked your phrase, when you do it the right way. Now, we're going to take a short commercial break really quickly, and we're going to return with Maya K. Van Rossum, like the most direct environmentalist you can hear on the show all year. She's awesome, and she wrote the book, The Green Amendment. More with Maya when we come back from this break. All right, welcome back to Problem Solver Politics. We are live in the KHTS studio. I'm your host, Cardinalis, with
Mark Murphy, attempting to restore civility to the political conversation.
And we are on the phone with Maya K. Van Rossum, the environmentalist of all environmentalists, who just wrote a book called The Green Amendment, proposing state constitutional amendments defending Mother Earth. In the same kind of way that we defend other inalienable rights, basically guaranteeing clean air, clean water, clean environment, so on and so forth. So, Maya, glad to have you with us again.
Glad to be back.
Yeah. So, okay. In the last segment, you said, okay, when we do it right. Now, I'll just be honest with you. I have a love-hate relationship with environmentalists. And the reason why is because there's some that I love and there's some that I hate. The ones that I love are the ones that are dedicated to the science of ecology and the environment and can strip themselves of the politics, the biases, the mythologies, and the old bad information they might have had, and are blazing a way forward so that all of us can enjoy clean beaches, clean air, clean water. I hate it that you can't go swimming in the middle river at Zion's National Park because you're worried about Giardia. I hate that when the beach gets closed because of excessive discharge from the water treatment plants in Ventura that we all can't go surfing. All of us absolutely hate that. And the ones that are blazing the trail to give us good information and good policy, I absolutely love. And then there's the psychos who are no different than the crusading warrior priests believing in their mythologies, trying to spread them throughout the Middle East, and they'll torture you into submission unless you think the absolute way they do.
We're talking about the head of the EPA, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, I just thought the current head of the
EPA.
That
was a good zinger, though.
Yeah, good.
I like it, right?
Yeah.
So this is what I find interesting, is environmentalists all the time are poo-pooing fossil fuels, which I think is great. One of my favorite quotes is from an automotive manufacturer who said, if Henry Ford could come back right now, the biggest criticism he would have of the automobile market is the fact they still use the internal combustion engine. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so stupid that we still rely so heavily on fossil fuels. However, what frustrates me is all these, quote, environmentalists are constantly fighting nuclear power, when nuclear power is proven to do absolutely no environmental damage other than it raises the temperature of the water that cools those rods 0.5 degrees. I interviewed the guy that was in charge of the nuclear power plant that gives 40% of the electricity to Manhattan. And I asked him what the environmental impact of his plant was. And he says nothing. All it does is 0.25 miles downwater the Hudson, the water is raised 0.5 degrees. It's thermally distorted 0.5 degree Fahrenheit.
Okay, now I have to take some response here. Was the head of the nuclear accident incident response team in Central Europe, meaning if something goes wrong when it comes to nuclear weapons, biological chemical. Hey, it's no different here. We have the same teams here. The issue is it's not that it causes an environmental impact until all the safeguards, which in many cases are not adequate, suddenly wipe out an entire population. That's what we're going to face, and we've seen it in Russia, we've seen it in other parts of the world, in Japan,
but we're already wiping out populations.
We're going to see it here. So environmental going nuclear is not a sound solution because it could wipe us out.
Well, no,
that's why I'm against it.
Well, hold on. Let's get Maya's opinion here really fast. What's your opinion on nuclear energy?
Look, you do have radioactive waste that has to be dealt with when you use nuclear energy. There can be accidents and catastrophes. They do happen, as Mark said. Right now, they're proposing building a new nuclear power plant on the Delaware River, right in areas that we know will be inundated repeatedly by floodwaters in the coming years because of sea level rise. And it will be built nearby a nuclear power plant that we already have in operation in that location that kills over 14 billion fish, eggs, and larvae a year. So you can't tell me that nuclear power doesn't have a heavy environmental footprint and is not a huge safety hazard for people, for the communities.
Well, but
that
less
live
than hydroelectric.
And also, you always have to look at the reality that we can't just look at nuclear in a vacuum. There are genuine better options.
Genuinely better options
for energy creation.
Okay, so hold on. I'm going to ask you what those better options are, but hold on. I agree with you that you say you can't look at it in a vacuum and that there is going to be, like I said, some kind of thermal distortion. It will kill some fish. It will kill some eggs.
Yeah, wait a second. Less... You come from Pennsylvania where we had a small accident in the 70s. I know because I was in the area at the time before I went into the response side.
Yeah, you're talking about a 15-year-old technology at that time that it was in its infancy. It's like comparing the first version of Windows.
But they
still use the same technology.
Salem Nuclear Generating Station that's in operation on the Delaware River was built in the 70s, right? So mm-hmm. The technology, right, that's when so many of these facilities were built. They're built a long time ago. They're still in operation. And these power plants want to extend the life of these facilities. Which will perpetuate, the harms that they're inflicting.
Well,
and again, it's not just about nuclear or nothing. It's about how do you create energy?
Okay.
And we don't need to continue to rely on nuclear to do that.
Well, if I agree that there are some consequences of all energy production, but it seems like nuclear is the least, yet it's the one we fight against the most dogmatically, and it gets what I call the Prius effect. Like, I was driving on the 101 once, and a celebrity pulled up next to me because the traffic was so thick, we all ended up going down to, like, 5 miles per hour. And he was in a Prius, and I was in my 77 Chevy 4x4, which is the first vehicle I ever drove when I got my license, okay? And he looked over at me so smugly, and I knew this guy was a huge environmentalist, and I could tell that he just didn't like the fact I was in a big gas guzzler. I wished I could have rolled down the window and yelled at him that my 77 Chevy has a lower carbon footprint than your new Toyota Prius does because we haven't figured out how to dispose of your batteries correctly. Most people don't realize the Toyota Prius, just in its manufacture and its first 6 years on the road, has more environmental impact as a, quote, green hybrid than a gas-guzzling, oil-dripping military transport Hummer will in its lifetime. Yet we dogmatically vilify the fossil fuel-ridden military Hummer and glorify the Prius, even though science shows the Prius is worse off. So how are we not doing that with atomic energy? If we need energy, why are we rejecting dogmatically all of these things that actually would improve our environment, just because there's something we thought was bad in the 70s, even though it's been proven wrong?
Well, it hasn't been proven wrong. I mean, the assertion that the big gas guzzlers are not part of the problem, I think is just a false assertion, right? And the question becomes, right now here in 2019, where do we go from here on out? We do have better technologies. We do have solar. We do have wind. We do have geothermal. We do have new technologies that are being created all the time. We've done the comparison as well to look at those renewable energy strategies versus, the dirty fracked fossil fuels, for example, that right now we are investing so much in states like Pennsylvania and Texas and other states across the nation. We know that these renewable strategies have a lesser footprint, particularly a lesser climate-changing footprint, and a lesser climate-changing footprint in the next 20 years, which is the time period within which we have to avert the most devastating impacts of climate change. So the question is, what do we do from here on out? Do we continue to build the gas guzzlers? Or do we continue to even build the hybrids, right, that are a combination of the two? Or do we start to build and invest in the electric vehicles that are going to be dependent on the renewable energy sources? I live outside of Philadelphia. I have two electric cars in my driveway. I have solar panels on my roof, geothermal in the ground. So when I plug my cars in at night, they're being fueled by energy from the sun. So it's doable. Right? I don't have tons of resources, and I'm outside of Philadelphia. I'm nowhere special. It's doable. We just need, but not everybody, right, has that capacity because government hasn't made the investments, not just financial investments, but in terms of the policies and the programs and the tax incentives and the laws, have not made the investments necessary to advance those clean energy options versus or in comparison to all the investments they're doing to continue to perpetuate and grow the dirty fossil fuels that are having a devastating impact on our present and on our future.
Okay. Now, I agree that if we weren't to do anything, that would be devastating. However, you got to realize you're talking to two radio hosts here in California. You can't build a guest house in your property now without it literally having solar panels on it.
Which
and
is
it goes
awesome.
Through.
Suddenly,
yeah,
we're doing
I know,
what the
but
best
I'm just saying to say that the
do.
Government's not doing anything is an absolute fallacy.
But
in
it's
fact,
against
here,
the federal government. The state government here is what's mandated.
Yeah,
that.
But the federal government's job is to protect us militarily. That is it. That
well,
is.
And not everybody lives in California. First, and not everybody lives in California, right? So everybody acknowledges and appreciates and you know applauds the fact that on so many issues, right? California is you know ahead of the curve. And that's important, but we have so many other states that need to get on that same path. And even California, right, even California isn't fundamentally recognizing the inalienable right to a healthy environment. And as a result, being focused first on prevention of harm and embracing just what you talked about, embracing by virtue of the Constitution, the obligation to pay attention to real science when engaging in decision making.
Okay.
So, you know, even California can do better.
Okay, so you say paying attention to real science. Now, first off, I love this. I love that you're proposing new solutions because we've had these same backwards, wrong-headed, not thinking outside of the box sparring battles between the two sides of politics here for far too long. So people that think outside of the box are problem solvers in our opinion. But one of my worries here is you say the real science. If it could be like I've named two examples, you know what I'm saying, where like carpool lanes, we figured out that they don't work.
And you want to use a technology for power plants that is destined to blow up a lot of and kill a lot of people. I'm looking at just going, we're worried about carpool lanes?
Yeah,
come
but see,
on, Cardin.
But the problem is, look.
We're facing a situation where the weather is changing dramatically because of what's happening in terms of the
environment. Hold on. We're going to address the climate change studies in a second.
We've cut
Let me get to my question.
Well, we've cut technology expense and raw technology expense in the area of environment to zero. The guy has literally just wiped out the engineers who were studying
that's an absolute fallacy. Okay, as a guy that actually had run a pest control company in his lifetime, I know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, the environmental legislation here in California is absolutely crippling. I mean, there's a reason why Barack Obama said, you can try and start a coal mine, but I will bankrupt you in the process, okay? So here's my only thing, is I want to get to your solutions, because we're, like, it's problem solver politics.
Wait a second, why is that bad? I don't understand why is that bad. If somebody tries to start a coal mine today, a coal mine that's going to devastate lives, that's going to devastate future generations because of its emissions, then why would it be a bad thing to actually disincentivize the startup of that coal and make right clear from the get-go, if you try to go down that path, it's not going to be economically viable, so don't go down that path.
Okay.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Look, like I'm not here to try and defend the environmental impacts of coal ash. I'm just simply saying that statement in and of itself debunks any claim that the government does not have an active role or is not taking an active role in environmental legislation. If a president can get up and say, I will bankrupt you as a challenging statement, that completely debunks any theory that the government is not already actively involved in legislation. So anyway, I want to get to your problems.
Nobody said that the government isn't actively involved in legislation. But what I'm saying and what I say and what my position is with this Green Amendment movement is that fundamentally, the way the laws are written and the way the laws are implemented is that they accept environmental degradation and pollution and harm as a foregone conclusion. And therefore, they focus on managing the how, the when, the where of that degradation and pollution. They don't focus first on what do we do to prevent it. And in most instances, right, the kinds of harms that we're experiencing, whether you're talking about from energy or from development projects, residential or other development projects, all these activities, there is a way to avoid harm first. Maybe not totally, but significantly. So we can't fall back immediately to how do we permit it. We have to start with how do we prevent harm first. And that's part of the problem with the way the laws are enacted currently in the U.S., and that's why we need this higher constitutional authority, because it flips the focus from acceptance to prevention.
Okay. Now, I love this. Really quickly, I guess, because this is outside of my outline for the show, but give me the first couple of examples that come to mind. How your way of doing this would be the way of doing it right and would be better.
Yeah. So I mean, and so if you're looking at energy, right, we would be focused not on how do we develop new technologies for extracting fossil fuels through things like fracking from the earth that create new environmental harms and perpetuate old ones. Right? But instead, we do invest first in the renewable energy options so that you're preventing the water pollution, the air pollution, the methane emissions, the climate changing emissions, right? You're preventing the deforestation that comes from fracking, and instead you're focused on how do you implement those renewable energy options.
I want to mention something in support of what you just said on energy. One key factor, and that is in your book, you go into great detail on the harm that fracking is occurring. And we have fracking going on in California, let alone what's going on in the state of Oklahoma and Texas and the Dakotas. It's frightening to see what it's doing. And to have California no longer be earthquake number one, earthquake state number one, but to have Oklahoma now surpassed us, that should tell us that something's wrong with this. And your facts are fantastic.
Thank you. And, you know, and that's such a good point, because people don't, you know, they ignore the fact that the footprint of fracking is so huge and so overwhelming, you know, and it does have so many devastating harms, all across the board. And as you said, including from, you know, creating earthquakes to taking people's drinking water supplies, right, to decimating our forests and climate change. But just another example, right, for how we can avoid harm rather than managing it or accepting it as a foregone conclusion. When we engage in development, in residential development, the traditional process, perhaps not in California, but in many states, right, is to go cut down the landscape, cut down the forest, moonscape the earth, right, to make it all uniform, to remove all the divots, and then you build your houses and you build your roadways and you put in place your lawnscapes. And then what you do, because of all of that impervious cover, all of those hardened surfaces, including the lawnscapes, they are hardened surfaces that the science shows are comparable to pavement. When it comes to rainfall, when the rain hits the land, it rushes off. It gets gathered in a big pit that they've constructed called the detention basin that holds the water for a period of hours, puts it in a pipe, dumps it in the creek with all of the pollution that it's collected, and then that water gets dumped on downstream communities. But you're not talking about one detention basin because, of course, in areas where you have development, you have lots of development.
Yeah, there's 20 of them in Valencia.
Lots of development. That's right. And so now you're creating a direct pathway for pollution to go into our waterways, but you're overwhelming the streams. You're scouring out, eroding out public lands, private lands, undermining roads, undermining bridges, and literally dumping a massive volume of water on downstream communities that is flooding them out, right? Flooding out homes and businesses, right? And inflicting damage and sometimes taking lives. If you were to change the way you develop that landscape so that you didn't moonscape and cut down all of the the natural landscapes from the get-go, but you instead plan to build your development with inside the natural envelope, right? So you had a much more limited footprint. And then you use strategies for and that would right off the bat reduce the pollution and reduce that runoff that otherwise is overwhelming our streams and downstream communities, because that water would now hit the ground and soak into the soil over time, feeding streams like Mother Nature did pre-development.
Okay.
And
so
then you create, for those areas where you do have hardened surfaces, there are other strategies. There are other infiltration strategies where you can collect the water, and rather than dumping it into the stream, you soak it into the soil. Right there. And not only do you reduce flooding and flood damages and pollution, but you actually increase the marketability and the market value of the homes that the developer is selling. You save them money on the front end, you make them money on the back end, and you get them their money much more quickly when you do that development the right way, while at the same time protecting our environment and downstream communities.
Okay, so Maya, we got to take a quick break here. But in summary, I like your limited government model. If you're suggesting that hyper-regulation due to California rebuilding codes are forcing developers to do things in a uniform blanket way that doesn't actually serve the individualistic needs of the environment or its citizens, and we should get rid of all this hyper-regulation in California.
Except on pest control businesses.
So we could start doing things differently. That's great. Anyway, we're going to take a quick commercial break really fast, and we're going to come back with Maya K. Van Rossum. This is Problem Solver Politics. It's 7:48. All right, welcome back to Problem Solver Politics. This is Carden Ellis. I am live in the KHTS studio with
Mark Murphy, maintaining civility in the political conversation, I think.
And we are joined by Maya K. Van Rossum, who's the environmentalist you want on your side.
Hey, and she's the one who's actually figured out that we need a constitutional amendment along the lines of free speech, of gun control, et cetera, an opportunity to vote that basically protects us and guarantees the right of fresh air, soil you can actually use, water that's not contaminated, making it a right, which we currently do not have.
Okay, and she has a very interesting proposal that's very federalist in nature. I like it. She suggests having state constitutions amended with a Green Amendment, which is also the title of her book. Check it out. It's called The Green Amendment.
John Adams will be proud.
John Adams will be proud. Okay, so Maya, I got a quick question for you. I said I have a love-hate relationship with environmentalists because there's some that are very reasonable and there's some that are very kind of psychotic. There's some that take a holistic view of everything. And then there's some that just, you know, it's all politics to them. And as Greg Gutfeld said, environmentalism is where all the socialists went to hide when Reagan made it not cool anymore. So I just have one question for you. We all know that industry can go too far. And I love the quote that Howard Schultz, he's an independent candidate right now, who was the ex-CEO of Starbucks, said. He said, not every business decision should be an economic one. And I totally agree with that. Man was not sent to Earth to pay his bills and die. Businesses need to look at things in more than just whether or not we make the most amount of money possible. So we know that industry, business, and polluters can go too far. Can environmentalism ever go too far?
I don't see how you can ever go wrong pursuing whatever your goal is in a way that protects the environment at the same time. I just don't see it. There's so much dependent upon a healthy environment for all of us. So as long as you pursue your goal in a way that protects the environment at the same time, I don't see that there's a downside.
Okay, because I look at this and I think a lot of these sound bites that you hear where, oh, even if it saves one or whatever, I look at that and I think, well, gosh, if we took that view about automobiles, then we would have the speed limit be 5 miles per hour everywhere, and we wouldn't be allowed to travel.
And we'd save a lot of lives.
Yeah,
we could also smoke pot while we're driving. It'd be easy.
So anyway, obviously there's some kind of happy medium that has to be reached in between economic issues, environmental issues, safe air, clean water, so on and so forth. So anyway, you were mentioning that you have some really good suggestions. One of them is this amendment that you wrote about in your book. And then we were talking specifically, you were mentioning something really interesting about the way we build homes. And right now, in California, we've got a housing crisis. It's impossible to build a house because of the hyper-regulation. But the only people that could get through are the big corporations that do large-scale building projects. And you were talking about different types of building with, like, hardened surfaces, so on and so forth. What are some ways that we could, moving forward, help better our environment besides passing this Green Amendment?
Again, changing your development strategy so you're minimizing stormwater runoff and harm. Are you talking about in people in their individual lives? I mean, I think across the scale, what we really need to do to protect our environment is we need people to get involved in politics and in advocacy and going to their town meetings and speaking up for environmental protection every time a decision is being made in their community that could have an effect, a harmful effect on the environment, and encouraging a better way, a better path. So to me, the best way we protect the environment is by people getting informed, engaged, involved, and speaking up. If you were talking about in our day-to-day lives, of course, there are decisions large and small that people can make, right, from reusable cups and bottles and bags and cycling rather than driving and all of those good things. But to drive big-picture change, we need our government to be more involved, and we need to be our government focused on preventing harm and preventing degradation and passing better laws and making better investments that advance environmental protection. And so big scale, big picture, that requires people being involved in government.
So what do you do when you have a president who directs his EPA and his organizations
Gosh.
To take their scientists that were involved in basic research and environmental research and to no longer do that? In other words, they can't even mention certain environmental words. They have to pull it out of their various documents.
You do the exact same thing I
they
have to do.
Have when... to do this. And I'm just curious, how do you work in that kind of a situation?
Well, I mean, it's nearly impossible, as you say. I mean, you have to be good at that, advocates, but you ultimately are going to have to change who the decision makers are. But I think in the immediate present, what a big, powerful, important thing people can do is turn to their state governments, right? Turn to the passage of Green Amendments. In the state of California, you have a right to fish, an inalienable right to fish, but you do not have an inalienable right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. Only two states have those kinds of fundamental rights to a healthy environment, Pennsylvania and Montana, and those, particularly in Pennsylvania, that's very recent. So in every other state across the nation, there's an opportunity to get a higher power for environmental protection to better hold your state governments accountable, right, and more accountable. And then ultimately, as we get state green amendments passed in state constitution after state constitution, we will have a country that is ready to pass a federal Green Amendment. That's down the line. That's step number two. But when you have a federal Green Amendment, we would then have the higher power necessary to hold the Congress, to hold the president, to hold agency heads accountable for their abuses of the environment, for their abuses, the abuses of their power that is advancing environmental degradation. That's why I think Green Amendments are so important, because they become the higher power that we can use to hold all government officials accountable once we get them. But we have to get them.
Okay, so I love what you say about having Green Amendments state per state. I would totally march on Sacramento to help you pass that law. When you say a federal law, I will march against you all the way to the Lincoln Memorial, just because all these federal laws always end up meaning that the special interest group associated with it runs the country instead of well-informed elected representatives.
But it's not a law. But that's the thing. It's not a law.
Well, an amendment is a law.
It's recognizing the inalienable right to a healthy environment, which becomes a restraint on government. It becomes a restraint on government power and authority to take actions, right, and render decisions and undertake activities that would infringe on the right to a healthy environment, either through governmental action or through the government of third parties. That's the beauty of it. It is a restraint on government so that they cannot overreach and infringe on our constitutional right to a healthy environment, just like the right to free speech and freedom of religion are restraint on government action that would overreach and infringe on our inalienable right to religion and free speech.
Okay,
right?
So in 1 minute here, I love so much of what you're saying. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are thinking, you know, this lady's awesome, and they're fanboying right now. I'm seeing the comments on our Facebook live feed. What is, I guess in the next minute, what is something our listeners could do to actually, that are interested in helping you along in this process? What's something they could do to help you?
They could organize a meeting in their community, invite me to come and speak and talk person to person about the power and importance of green amendments and how we can get one passed in their state. In your state, presumably it's in California, right? But if anybody from another state is listening, I'll go there too. My commitment is I will go anywhere on my dime to advance this fundamental change because I believe this is how we're going to literally save the earth.
Okay.
At least our part of it.
At least our part of it. All right. You guys, we have been talking to Maya K. Van Rossum. How can people find you in the next 10 seconds? How can they find you and find your book?
forthegenerations.org.
All right. So, guys, we have been talking with Maya K. Van Rossum. She is the author of The Green Amendment, a book about passing a constitutional amendment state by state to protect the environment and all of its citizens that have to live in it. It has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, Maya. We hope to get you on the show again sometime. Mark, I don't know about you, but I thought this was awesome. I'm going to recommend this to everybody I see. And hope that all of you guys join us next week. This is Problem Solver Politics. See you next week.